we present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the Whitby Gazette, read by Corrie Caulfield.
Does your mum deserve an evening of pampering which will make her feel like a princess? The Whitby Gazette has teamed up with Cooperative Funeral Care to give her a night out she'll remember for years to come.
Now, thanks to Valerie Bussey in Cleveland for sending that in. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Francis Ween and Jeremy Hardy. And opposite them on my left, Miles Jupp and Andy Hamilton. Francis, have a listen to this. Francis, whose leadership credentials are open to debate? And can I just remind you...
Well, I wouldn't have known if Jeremy hadn't very helpfully written the word election on his bit of paper.
Not much gets past me.
Is this about the debates? Well, actually, I think the Independent on Thursday had this front-page headline saying 90 minutes that could change Britain. I thought, what it could do? I think people got overexcited by this word historic and unprecedented, that it could change. An asteroid could have landed in Budley Sulston while they were on air, but it didn't. But it was all right. It was better than most people expected in that it wasn't a complete fiasco and a few people stayed awake for the full 90 minutes, not many, but some. And actually, the real winner was Alistair Stewart. You think he was wonderful in the background. You kept hearing this voice, Mr. Brown! Mr. Cameron, hurry up, 1 minute.
She's looking rather cadaverous, I thought. He looks slightly scary, as if he'd risen from the dead to present the programme.
I'm not sure that Clegg did particularly win. He was just the most confident, because Cameron wore an expression that said, I know my head is making sounds, but I don't know what they mean. Brown wore an expression that said, I'll sign anything if you'll just let me sleep. Clegg was all modern and Facebooky. He looked straight down the camera lens in the Oswald Mosley styley and used his arms a lot. It was over-rehearsed, but people like that. Today you say to people, how are you? And they say, I'm good. And you think, well, I think I'll be the arbiter of your morality in this context. I think you mean you're well, which is an adverb. But we're in this bright, perky, I'm so fantastic zeitgeist. And he fits that perfectly, Clegg. But said nothing of any real substance, I don't think.
The first 5 minutes were quite funny because they were in an anecdote competition because Cameron started it with, I met a black man in Plymouth. And then they all went...
Phone the local hun, they're sorting it out, don't worry.
And then they all started, you know, and Brown said, oh, I was in Manchester talking to some policemen. I was talking to some teachers in Cardiff. You know, I went to Mordor and chatted with some orcs. And it was just this ridiculous...
It did reach the point where you thought you were going to have... Oh, I was at a human sacrifice in Rochester. We were drowning kittens in Leicestershire the other day.
And we got chatting about the economy.
Yeah. they're not going to tell you the truth. They're not going to say, the other day I was in Wolverhampton and I met a man and... He's a bit mental, really, so I didn't really draw any conclusions from that.
Well, actually, I have to say I was disappointed when the debate said it was going to focus on domestic issues and there wasn't a single tip about folding bed linen.
When it's on Sky, is it going to be Alistair Stewart again? I think they should have him for all of them, because he's got that sort of barking delivery in both senses of the word. And I sort of associate him with police cameras action. So I kept waiting for him to say, look at this idiot!
If you watch the version signed for the deaf, the interpreter seemed to do the sign for blah, blah, blah for 90 minutes.
I didn't watch it on television. I don't have a television. I listened to it on the radio, and it was almost impossible to work out what on earth was going on at any time, because, you know, they would speak as soon as the other one finished, so you'd be listening to it, you think, God, Clegg's sounding a bit conservative all of a sudden. It was very confusing, but they sounded nervous at the beginning, and I thought, why is that? But then, of course, I realised they are in the north.
You know that ITV came across all pompous and said, we're not having any commercial breaks because we want to protect the seriousness of the occasion. You thought, yeah, like anyone's going to buy advertising space in that. Well, I thought that one thing was interesting, which was that 90 minutes, I thought, oh, that's too long. And I did my own bit of consumer research because my 19-year-old walked out after 11 minutes. And my wife fell asleep after 20 minutes. So that's the youth vote and the women's vote. But what I thought was interesting about seeing somebody over 90 minutes was that with David Cameron, it's interesting, he came across all American and Barack Obama-ish, and he said, choose hope over fear. But, I mean, we're not American, we're English. We like fear. You know, that's why we buy the Daily Mail. We don't...
But he did, when he was launching the Tory manifesto, it was full of things like, ask not what your country can do for you, I have a dream, and all these American... What's time to a hog? That sort of thing. These strange American phrases he's picked up over the years in various Etonian societies.
Clegg just said, kept
Whereas
saying...
Whereas Clegg just said, raindrops and roses and whiskers on kittens, which was...
He did say, try something different, and good food costs less.
Britain's first televised election debate took place on Thursday. At the end of the debate, the National Grid reported a surge in electricity as voters unplugged the kettle and stuck their tongue in the socket. Nick Clegg was the runaway winner with 61% and will now go on to play Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz. Two points to Francis. Jeremy, why hasn't Mum gone to Iceland?
Ah, those pesky, pesky Icelanders with their collapsed banks and their cod-stealing shenanigans have grounded all our planes with their pesky pumice cloud. Maybe we'll all take a step back now, because especially when we need to look at our carbon footprints, maybe we'll all rethink it, because people just expect that at any time of day they can just rock up at an airport and for a few quid they can climb thousands of feet into the sky and be borne aloft across the globe to spend a weekend in Goa reading the new Cormac McCarthy, because in this country we just don't have the seating. People just expect to be able to get in a giant metal bird and defy God and nature, you know, because, oh, I've been reading about this village in the Andes where the people are destitute but euphoric, and there's a glacier and every 5,000 years it takes on the shape of Brian Clough, and it happens that this time it's during my birthday week, so we've got to go. Perhaps people need to take stock.
I was a bit worried. Is it not two signs of the apocalypse? Volcanoes from the north and Lib Dems winning a debate. There was a sort of strange moment, though, about Iceland. You think, not in our good books, are they? First it's the banks, then it's the volcanoes. I'd give up if their frozen prawn ring wasn't so nice.
It has been an extraordinary few years for Iceland, I suppose, to suddenly go from where they were to now the state where ash is, in fact, their only export.
There was a horrible sense that they were finally scattering Magnus Magnusson, wasn't there? Oh, I feel so bad now.
There was a great interview, because we approach life from such a consumerist angle, and I heard one interview where this rather arsey interviewer said, well, when can the public expect to be able to fly in planes again? And the guy just went, it's a volcano. which is what we're all forgetting is when volcanoes go up, there isn't really a plan B. Coincidentally, last week I was in a hotel at the foot of a volcano in Costa Rica.
Oh, your carbon footprint.
I know. No, I walked there.
Oh, fine.
And this hotel was not far from the lava fields from the last eruption. You could go for a walk as far as the lava fields. And this, it's still an active volcano. It's still chucking out sort of glowing rocks and stuff. And there was a great sign, and it said, in the event of eruption, get away.
All air traffic across the UK has been grounded because of the eruption of the Eyjafjallajökull Jurakutl volcano in Iceland. Thank you very much. Air travel to or from many parts of Europe has been halted, and already it's being claimed as an election victory for UKIP. 2 points to Jeremy. Miles, why might the Pope's visit to Britain warrant special attention?
Well, it's not been a fun week, I dare say, in Vatican City. There's probably been some fairly awkward silences at breakfast.
Very unfortunate manner, some of the priests.
he's coming over here, and people would like to see the Pope arrested because of a letter that he wrote a few years ago, mainly Richard Dawkins, the purveyor of atheist merchandising. and Christopher Hitchens, who wrote God Is Not Great, I Am. They want to arrest the Pope, which seems, I mean, an extraordinary thing to attempt to do. I mean, I shouldn't imagine either of them have attempted an arrest before. For your first arrest, I would say that is a pretty big target. I would probably sort of practice on a nun.
It's not going to be that quick because of the robes, though, is it? Yeah.
It'll be an amazing lineup, won't it? Number three, step forward. That hat is familiar. But lots of people have got excited about the possibility of arresting the Pope in a Van Dragon-esque way. Libby Purvis wrote an article in The Times that said, arrest the Pope. I rather think we should, as if someone had suggested perhaps a few games of charades after dinner.
I just would love to see the Pope in the dock entering a defence of infallibility.
They are amazing, the Vatican, though, because you'd think at a time like this they'd be making some slight efforts to mollify their critics. And instead, that man Cardinal Bertone came out and said that paedophilia was synonymous with homosexuality. Thinking the best thing to do when you're in a hole is keep digging, really.
So far, the Vatican have blamed the media, the Jews, gays, the devil and the Irish. And apparently bookmakers are now offering 2-1 that John Terry or Ashley Cole are next.
Official Vatican exorcist, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But this guy, they interviewed him. I mean, it is an official post. He is the Vatican exorcist. He's at the end of the corridor next to human resources. And he said, they said, what happens when you exorcise people? He said, well, sort of stuff usually flies out of their mouths. And he said, I exorcised a woman who worked in the media the other day, and radio equipment started flying out of her mouth. Well, that's extraordinary. I mean, yeah. Do Dixons know about this? What is going on?
He wrote a letter recently, the Pope, saying the Catholic Church needed to modernise, and it was in Latin.
Renowned atheist Richard Dawkins and journalist Christopher Hitchens have consulted lawyers to see whether the Pope can be arrested for crimes against humanity when he visits Britain. Pope Benedict plans to visit Britain in the autumn when he will beatify Cardinal John Henry Newman and visit Alton Towers. Which plot failed to proliferate?
Which plot? Oh, is this... Oh, hang on. Is it... Oh, this isn't rustling potatoes, is it?
We know.
No, okay.
Nuke talks.
Non-proliferation.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, that's right. Yes. Oh, yeah. Thank you, Jeremy. Yeah, give the points to Jeremy, because it matters to him.
No. It's almost as important as potatoes. It's nuclear weapons.
Yeah, almost. Yeah. My favourite quote about this story was... The United States were urging the Ukraine to give all their weapons-grade uranium to the United States for safekeeping. And basically, Obama is saying, you know, it's a very dangerous world now. The nuclear superpowers need to gang up on everyone else and make sure that, you know, only people we can trust have nuclear weapons.
But it's all this... I don't like the idea of all this radioactive material that's loose. There's an average of 19 incidents of lost or stolen nuclear material since 1995. How do you lose nuclear material? Surely if you turn the lights off, it glows in the dark. It can't be...
They want to put nuclear materials just where they can't be found. That's their aim. So I would suggest sending them by Royal Mail with insufficient postage.
I like this headline in the papers on Wednesday. Georgia foils a plot to sell uranium. Do not think it sounds like a really exciting children's book. Barack Obama's nuclear security summit failed to impose new sanctions on Iran and ended with the revelation that Georgia foiled a plot to sell weapons-grade uranium on the black market in March this year. The stolen Georgian uranium was enriched to 70%, roughly the same as the average British MP. North Korea wasn't invited to the table because organisers couldn't find a booster seat for Kim Jong-il. So at the end of round one, the scores are Francis and Jeremy have got 5 points and they are in the lead. Miles and Andy have got 3. We start round two with a cutting from the BBC News.
A man has robbed a shop in Cwmbran. The offender is described as between 18 and 22 and wearing a white hooded top. Officers are asking for him to come forward as he may have vital information that could assist the inquiry.
That's the big society for you, isn't it? Let's get the criminals involved in crime fighting.
Our thanks to Viv Phillips for sending us that. Francis, whose tea party should include bendy straws?
Will there be a musical interruption if I say the magic words? Sarah Palin. Isn't it nice of her to keep popping back again? That's when we thought we'd seen the last of her. Well, someone has leaked a document which lists all her requirements, her riders, I think they call them, all the things she needs if you have her to take part in a debate or give a speech. It's very much like Clegg and Cameron and Brown. Private jet to wherever she's going.
Got
a Learjet or above, and luxury hotel accommodation, plus bendy straws and lashings of ginger beer.
But she was very specific about the jet. It had to be a Lear 60. Mm. I do not want to see Sarah Palin on a King Learjet. Well, she's a really good flight, and they all kill each other before they land.
I don't think it's particularly diva-ish behaviour. Everyone's saying, oh, this is very diva-ish. She's asking for things like a laptop and a printer that's already loaded with paper. That's not diva-ish. I shouldn't imagine Mariah Carey demands, you know, a card to use the photocopier and access to a hole punch.
But actually paying her to come and speak. So if anyone is prepared to pay, then clearly she can get away with murder, because she...
But these are universities,
yeah,
hiring her to come and say something sensible. It's like asking Abu Hamza to help you with your contact lenses. It's the most... embarrassing details have emerged about the demands Sarah Palin makes at speaking engagements. Students at California State University found 5 pages of Palin's contract in a dumpster, along with the speak and spell machine used to explain it to her. Palin's contract states that her hotel pillow must have a chocolate on top and a rifle underneath. She commands up to $100,000 a speech, which is $50,000 per opinion. 2 points to Francis. Miles, have a listen to this. Miles, which NHS clean-up job has forged a foreign debate?
Well, there's been some frightened headlines recently saying that 1 in 10 of NHS workers are working on forged documents, although closer inspection reveals that 1 in 10 of actually just one particular contractor. And then slightly closer inspection reveals actually 7.8%, which is 1 in nearly 13, not 1 in 10. And what it turns out, there are illegal immigrants in our country, they forge these documents and they go into our hospitals and, there's no other word for this, they clean them. I mean, absolutely beggars belief. Yeah. No, and take £7 or £8 an hour for the privilege. I mean, it is sickening.
If you are very good at forging documents, why would you restrict yourself to hospital porter? Why would you not suddenly be, I don't know, director of vision for the BBC? Why would you not just...
A visual department at the Broadcasting Corporation these days?
I have no idea.
Is it the wireless with pictures? I hear it's catching on with the teens.
But I mean, these people who've forged these documents, if their hands are steady enough to forge a Home Office stamp, surely we should have them in surgery.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how far it goes, but I'm very pleased with my own GP, Dr. Elvis Presley.
An NHS audit of 5 hospitals revealed that 8% of the staff employed via contractors ISS Mediclean had forged immigration documents. Hundreds of illegal migrants could be working in hospitals. Well, at least they're working, not lying around, taking up bed space like all those sick bastards. So I can tell you that at the end of round 2, the scores are Francis and Jeremy are still in the lead. Miles and Andy have got 5 points, but Francis and Jeremy have got 7. Before we start round 3, here is a cutting from The Independent.
A 66-year-old man has pleaded guilty to having sex with a horse and a donkey. Requesting he be released on bail, the defence counsel said the defendant does not have a stable address.
Thanks to the astonishing number of people who sent us that. Jeremy, have a listen to this. Jeremy, why shouldn't your retirement plans be grand?
Ah, what it is that older people actually don't like looking after children and other younger members of the family as much as they do going out and having a laugh. Because grandparenting is like rights without responsibility. You just get to fill kids up with quality street and ties and hand them back at the end of the weekend. And the fact is that little kids are like kittens. They are fantastically entertaining, but not terribly intellectually invigorating. So if you want to stay mentally alert and in tune with the world, the worst thing you should do is volunteer to do full-time childcare when you're old. You need to be out with your mates at book clubs, illegal gun clubs, and taking part in dogfights and that sort of thing. When my daughter was little, I did a lot of parenting, and you do start to go a bit mental because you're getting very little mental stimulation. And one day I'd spend a lot of time just on my own with my daughter, and Mark Steele came round, and I was just getting up to go to the lavatory, and I turned to Mark and said, "Daddy, go wee wee."
Did Mark congratulate you?
A lot of the stuff was very obvious. It said that friends are better for you than grandchildren. That's because friends don't wet your sofa.
Well, some do.
Jeremy accepted.
You let me on the sofa, that's going to happen, Sandy. You should have told me to stay in the basket.
It also said that caring for grandchildren can get in the way of pensioners having a fulfilling social life. And it's true, it is true. It's very hard to go dogging if you've got a car sick toddler in the back.
People are really good at making friends, though, aren't they? Because they've got that strategy that if no one's talking to an old person, they just go, "Oh, yeah." And you think, "Don't respond, don't respond." They go, "Cool." Yeah. Just don't respond. And they go, "Oh, dear." And you say, What is it? "Oh, I'm glad you asked me that." And then you're stuck.
They're great for comedy material, though, because I used to share a house in Herne Hill, and we used to go down to the Wimpy Bar. And there were two old ladies there I used to eavesdrop on. I remember one of them said, "That girl at number 11, she's pregnant. She's only 17. Oh, that's terrible." And then she said, "Well, before the war, if you were a young girl and you had a child out of wedlock, you were sent out into the country to have the baby." And the other one said, "Yeah, that's right." She said, "Yes." And she said, "And if you were allowed to keep the baby, if, mind, you had to pretend it was your sister or your brother." There was a long pause, and then the other one said, "Yes, things were much nicer then."
Researchers from Greenwich University have concluded that having hobbies and close friends produces a happier retirement than spending lots of time with your grandchildren. Those pensioners who took up a hobby, such as building model aeroplanes, were 30% happier. Sniffing the glue. Pensioners were asked if they had life satisfaction. Answers included yes, no, have you come about the bins? And is it time for Lovejoy yet? 2 points to Jeremy. Andy, but soft, what light from yonder window tweets?
So it's Twitter.
It is about Twitter?
You see, I know nothing about Twitter. I rather liked Hugh Laurie's idea that he would subscribe to a network called Shush.
Do you know what the quote, "What light from yonder window shines," do you know where it comes from?
Yeah, that's from Romeo and Juliet.
So put Romeo and Juliet together.
Oh, yeah, they're doing a text version of Romeo and Juliet called Romeo and Juliet.
Shakespeare Company, no less.
It is, yeah.
You say, always have to experiment with Shakespeare. Yeah. They can't just do it properly. They say, "Let's do a version of Romeo and Juliet set in a beehive in the future." You think, no, why don't you just try doing it well? Just once. Why don't you try doing a production of Romeo and Juliet where the male leads don't all grab their crutches every 5 minutes to prove they understand the sexual innuendo? Stop leaping around the stage as though everybody in Jacobean England had some problem where they couldn't stand still for 4 seconds.
I've got an actual quote here from the Twitter Juliet. "Just got home from school, a day full of boring maths lessons. Boys at school are so minging." And you just think, those must have been the words Shakespeare was searching for.
Yeah. Yeah. If he were alive now, he'd be thinking, why didn't I write that? I mean, the awful truth is, I mean, Shakespeare was a fantastic writer, but Romeo and Juliet is sort of crap.
What?
Well, it's a nonsense.
It's a bad remake of West Side Story, isn't
it?
This Twitter thing, they'll do other plays like that. I mean, I imagine Waiting for Godot won't be the same if he can just text and say he's running a bit late. Romeo and Juliet is being played out in real time by actors on the microblogging site Twitter, where it has been renamed Such Tweet Sorrow. A few things have changed. Romeo and Juliet don't die in this version. Instead, Romeo suddenly goes offline when Juliet discovers he's actually a 55-year-old lorry driver. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along, Mr. Ween.
This is from The Times. Many thanks to Mary Hannon, who sent it in from Suffolk. It's about Fred Perry. It says, at that time, adding more than a touch of spice to his life, Perry was dating Marlene Dietrich, the film star, while also teaching her the rudiments of the game. According to Dietrich's daughter, Fred taught my mother to play tennis with great patience and lots of little passionate hugs, punctuated with rapid kissing between flying balls.
Mr. Hardy.
Now, this was sent in by Jackie Smethurst, and it's from the BBC website Online News magazine. When the curtain goes up on Thursday's first televised prime ministerial debate, audiences will witness three men used to holding their own in front of an audience.
Mr. Jupp.
This was sent by Mr. Tim Dayton from the Didsbury area of Manchester. It's a letter from the Environment Agency. It says, Dear Occupier, at the Environment Agency, we are always improving our flood warning service, and we want to let you know about some important changes to your current service. Following a recent update to our flood maps, the flood warning area for your property has now changed. You're now part of the River Mersey.
Mr. Hamilton.
This is from William McIntyre in Falkirk. It's from the Daily Telegraph. It's a football report, and it's a manager speaking. He says, Chris has been feeling his groin for a couple of weeks, and I don't think the cold weather helped him.
You just have to take it too far, didn't you?
Let's take a look at the final score. Miles and Andy have got 7 points, but this week's winners are Francis and Jeremy with 9. Before we leave you, here's a cutting from the Peoplesshire News sent in by Douglas Jardine.
The health centre has apologised after advertising for an administrator with the knowledge of medical termination. The recruit ad should have read medical terminology.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Francis Ween, Jeremy Hardy, Miles Jupp and Andy Hamilton. In the chair was Sandy Toxford, and the news was read by me, Corrie Caulfield. The chair's script was written by Simon Littlefield, Lucy Clark and Roderick Crooks, with additional material by Elliot Howe, James Kettle and John Hunter. The producer was Sam Bryant.